Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well and staying dry. We've had a pretty good bit of rain, and we're going to get a good bit more tonight. But the good news is it looks like Helene shifted a little east, and, by tomorrow morning, it looks like things will be clearing up and calling for just partly cloudy during the day tomorrow and clear and by tomorrow night, and nice on Saturday.
Feels like there could be a 6 to 8 hour window tonight.
Oh,
where there's a pretty
overnight
intense,
yeah. Overnight may not be pretty, so yeah. Be careful if you're out and about, especially late tonight, because once again it appears that midnight to 4 o'clock or something, 4 a.m is when the wind could be the most damaging, and we could get some heavy rain starting earlier this evening.
That's probably, yeah, take the necessary precautions and and be ready for pretty intense, but like you said, maybe we've dodged a bullet, because
sure
there's although these things are
there's no guarantees.
These things are
no
prickly, and some other parts of the Southeast are going to get a lot of severe weather in the next day or so, the amount of
water that there is. The storm surge is perhaps the biggest concern down on the coast where it comes in.
I've got a couple Destin live cams that I check in on. Yeah. You know, that's monitor the
that can
the,
be pretty interesting.
The coast, and yeah, it seems like although you said it has shifted a little bit to the east, I think the Gulf of Mexico is going to be making its presence felt over the next couple of hours.
All right, so we are here. We are comfortable inside the studio. Bill, Dan, and our regular third here on Thursdays, and that's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how you doing?
Doing all right. It's
has your yard washed any?
Yes.
Yeah.
Completely.
Well, at least yours. I haven't been over to younger sons who lives in your neighborhood, who does not have anything near a flat backyard.
Oh yeah.
So we'll see that in the morning.
Yeah. No, it's I did all that yard work last week, and now it's just we got plenty of moisture, plenty of rain to get everything back going again.
Oh yeah. Well,
it does not seem like Saturday is going to be impacted.
It's going to be a really nice day, much nicer than the last two weekends.
We'll see how nice it is.
I
was going to say, we'll see how nice it is for Brent Venables and Hugh Freeze.
That's true.
Those are two coaches who, just like we were saying last week, feels like Hugh Freeze and Sam Pittman were both coaches that desperately wanted to avoid an 0-1 start in conference play.
I think you even more desperately don't want to start 0-2.
I think those are two programs that, no matter what you've endured lately, I think those are two programs unaccustomed to 0-2 starts in league play. I mean, we used to make. I mean, Bob Stoops' conference record is hilarious.
It's ridiculous.
Right? I mean, it is. Yeah. And there were years where they didn't lose two conference games.
Most years
Bob Stoops
were hardly. I mean, they lost two conference games. It was a down year.
Yeah. So to start 0-2 at Oklahoma in conference, and I believe is Texas next week.
Texas is their next game after a bye week.
So to start 0-2 with
both Oklahoma and Texas have next week off.
To start 0-2 in conference play, and then your next game is against what will presumably be a top five Texas team. I suspect the winner of Bama Georgia jumps to 1 this weekend, but I don't know.
We have talked about how difficult Oklahoma schedule is compared to Texas's. Look again at the schedule. All right, open day, then they have Texas. Then they have South Carolina, who is better.
Where's South Carolina again?
It's in Oklahoma.
Okay.
But I mean, still, South Carolina is better, or they have appeared to be better than anybody thought. Their next game is at Ole Miss. Then they have Maine. Then they're at Missouri. Then their open date. Then they have Alabama at home at Baton Rouge. That's how they close it out. I mean, they desperately need to win this ball game, but Auburn, I feel, even more desperately needs to win it because it's a home game and they're about to go on the road for a month.
Oklahoma got a tough draw of road games, and keep in mind that the Texas game is technically a home game for them, even though it's not being played in Norman.
Right.
It's being played in Dallas. They're playing that one in Arlington.
But yes, I mean, you look at the Oklahoma schedule, and you'd have to say that Auburn and South Carolina appear to be the easiest games that they have in conference.
Yeah, so two teams that desperately need to avoid an 0-2 start in conference play, and that's going to be the case for one of them. Can Oklahoma, can they bounce back from a pretty thorough loss to Tennessee last week, and can Auburn right the ship after a second loss this season, the one to Arkansas on Saturday? And Fergie, this is the first time we got to talk to you since the game Saturday. I mean it's a lot of what you talk about when you preview the Oklahoma game has to do with what you saw on display on Saturday against Arkansas, right? Can Auburn find a way to cut back on the turnovers? I think especially the interceptions. Although you only had one in the second half with Thorne, and it was
could well have been a completion.
But still, interceptions have been a problem. Turnovers have been a problem. Maybe the biggest problem for the Auburn offense this year. And then on defense, I think that the third and long, the things that helped Arkansas convert on third and long, whether it was a mobile quarterback finding space or a coverage breakdown or the pass rush not getting home, like those problems that popped up defensively.
Yeah.
Like I feel like when you preview the Oklahoma game, it's a lot of trying to fix those things that felt like fatal errors against Arkansas.
Yeah, here's the thing on offense. I wrote about it earlier this week. Yes, Auburn's offense has pretty good numbers when you look at everything but the turnovers. I will caution everyone, though, that there were a lot of empty drives Auburn's had against Cal and Arkansas that weren't ending in turnovers. On top of that, the defenses are about to get a whole lot harder.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so not only does Auburn need to cut down turnovers, they need to get better as an offense as a whole, because you've got Oklahoma's got a tough defense. You've got Georgia, obviously.
Of course, the next game.
Kentucky's got a great defense. Yes. Missouri's pretty nasty at times on that side of the ball. So that's the thing. It's like, yes, Auburn should be better on offense if they stop turning the ball over. But that's easier said than done against this crew they got coming up. And additionally, as it's been talked about throughout the week, I'm sure by a lot of folks, you look at the last several years, Hugh Freeze offenses, they just turn the ball over a lot.
And not just several years. I saw a stat that over his career as a head coach and at the FBS level, his teams have averaged 82nd nationally in interception percentage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his teams throw interceptions. He likes to throw the ball down the field.
Yeah.
And that's going to result, as a matter of fact, it's been an average of just over an interception per game for every single game that he's coached.
Yeah, and so the problem is Auburn's having four.
That doesn't
right
mean
now
they throw an interception in every game, but you throw four in one game, it takes three games without back to that average of one per game.
So notwithstanding, like, do you think there are things – you've watched a lot of Auburn football over the years. You've seen a lot of coaches try different things, Bill. Like, does an idea come to mind as far as what this offense could be doing to cut back on turnovers or interceptions? Is it as simple as
– run the ball?
As simple as giving the ball to the running backs? Like, I mean,
and Freeze talked about it a little bit this week. I thought that was interesting because, like, the initial thing for him is to double down on his – I mean, it's his whole thing from offense. When you talk about his whole offseason where it was double down on Peyton Thorne, double down on his guys, do it his way, run it. And now it's, oh, we don't think the scheme's bad, we just need to execute it better. He did say, though, there were some things that he thought, oh, maybe we can do this or that. Running the ball is a big thing. And I think they got to go back to, in my opinion, more traditional RPOs. Because I've seen a lot of those RPO slants, the touchdown to Keandre Lambert-Smith, the slant, the one that was the 10-yarder was an example of it. This offensive line needs to be going forward. It needs to be as much. They have so many issues in pass pro.
You mean literally, not like they need to be showing progress.
They need to be moving literally.
They need to be their feet moving forward.
I would, if I was Auburn. And this is, I'm never going to be a play caller, but I won a couple of really good
never
games.
Say never.
I won a couple of really good games on the video game last night. But here's the thing that I would do if I was Auburn. I would save the drop back passes for when you absolutely have to. And there's no, like, third and long or second and very long or something like that. It felt like so many times this year, Auburn has gone to the line, they've checked, they've done the hat count, and then they've checked into a pass, a drop back pass where guys are dropping back in pass protection, and efficiency wise, they're just not there yet. It's just not a play that they want to run over and over. Like, until they can find that they are going to be efficient and not turn the ball over or not throw the ball away. That's the other thing that people need to keep in mind about it. Before the final drive against Arkansas, Peyton Thorne was 6 of 14 throwing the ball, and almost all of his yards came on those two shots. Or, you know, the touchdown and then the other good ball. And taking it, you got to make the throws, got to make the plays, but taking advantage of some bad defense from Arkansas. So I think for Auburn, it's you need to run the ball. You need to rely on that. This offensive line is better at run blocking than they are pass protecting. Mm-hmm. And we knew that coming in. It just felt like there was a stretch in the game on Saturday where I think Auburn dropped back to pass on like 7 straight plays early in the second half with Peyton Thorne. I was like, I would have never thought they would have done
there
that.
There were fewer than 20 just handoffs.
Yeah.
In the game.
There's also
Auburn, 60 plus plays.
And if you're just going to sit there and say like, "Hey, well, our offense says we're going to throw the ball if we get this and we're going to do that." Maybe change up some of that. Maybe run the ball and stick with it. I mean, that's the other thing we've seen the first few games of the season. There are going to be runs because this Auburn offensive line is not this like demolishing group up front. There're going to be runs that are going to go for 1 or 2 yards. But you just got to stick with it, I think, personally, because you have Jarquez Hunter and you have Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb. Like, you want to lean on those guys. And that's also why I think, you know, people are going to ask, like, oh, what's going to happen this week at quarterback? It's also why I think Peyton Thorne's going to be your quarterback on Saturday, because I think you're going to need to run the ball. And he gives you more just being able to pull it than Hank Brown.
There are a couple of stretches in the Cal game where it's either a lot of passes in a row or it's multiple plays where if it's a run, it's a Peyton Thorne run. I think figuring out a way to figure out the I don't know, distributing the ball, you know, asking to lessen the load for the quarterback. That seems like it would be a necessary next step.
All right, we're just underway. We're going to get to our first break here this afternoon. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And we'll be right back. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson. There we go. It's apparently everything's all right now as we are just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Ryan Wade, owner and stylist at 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Football is back on the plains, which means it's time for Tiger Takes.
Join Bill and Dan every Wednesday at 5:30 on The Drive
as they visit with Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante. Every week, the guys hear the unique perspective from inside the locker room while learning the latest news about the team. Tiger Takes, every Wednesday at 5:30 on The Drive on ESPN 106.7. Brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. War Eagle.
This November, our country needs common sense and strong leadership to return to the White House. Vote Republican on November
888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Before we talk some more football, and there's plenty to discuss, let's talk a little basketball with Auburn starting practice yesterday.
Yep.
Bruce Pearl meeting with the media. You stuck around. What were your thoughts just watching the guys out there in that first, quote, official day of practice?
Yeah, this is a really interesting team. I found it not surprising that Bruce Pearl said yesterday, hey, this team's better on defense right now. That's early season stuff. We hear it in football all the time. Hey, we're hard to score on. I like the firepower and the versatility they got. I think Miles Kelly is going to be a big-time pickup for this team. I asked Bruce about it yesterday. The fact that they have three experienced off-ball scorers is something that not a lot of teams are going to be able to have. Miles Kelly was the best player at a Georgia Tech team that didn't have a great season, but they knocked off some big name teams. I think Kelly's a really, really fun player. There were a couple of moments in practice, and before in warm-ups really, where just watching him shoot, and I was like, man, he's going to be a great addition to that. Very interesting to hear that they're going to try to experiment some things with guys being versatile. Last season, you knew you had two point guards, two shooting guards, two small forwards, two power forwards, two centers. This year, you've got guys who are going to play
multiple
positions.
You've got like 3 1-2s, 3 2-3s, mm-hmm. Guys that could play.
Got a 4-5.
Yeah.
A 3 who can be a 4.
When you were talking about three off-ball scorers, there's it's not crazy to think about a lineup that has all three of them in there with Denver Jones at the point.
Absolutely.
It feels like a big bet. I mean, the things that I'm – when you bring back this much experience, there aren't as many question marks as there would be if you rebuilt the roster. But I would look at how does J.P. Pegues fit in as one of the big questions, because after J.P. it's either Denver or a
Todd.
Freshman – getting most of the run at point guard. The other question is, I mean, the experiment with Janai at the four, it becomes a question of how much does Dylan need to play no matter what you're doing with Janai? What should Dylan's minutes look like? And I guess the same question for Chaney in that situation, if you're going to play Janai at the four. How serious are they about an increase in minutes for Dylan? And maybe significantly more run with Dylan and Janai together.
Yeah, this team's going to play all those guys. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, I'm going to stand on the opinion that Janai at the four is going to be a rotational lineup kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a full-time deal.
Johnson, I know there's a lot of people who are wondering about Chaney Johnson. I would point out Chaney had a great finish to last season. Great SEC tournament for Chaney. It's tough to replace a guy like Jalen Williams, but here's the thing. He doesn't have to replace all of Jalen Williams on his own. I think there was somebody on Twitter I was talking about that with yesterday. If you get Chaney Johnson out there, and if the Chaney Johnson you saw at the end of last season, if that is your fifth starter, you got a pretty good team.
I think Chaney gives you a really good chance of getting 12.78 rebounds a game.
He could, depending on what his minutes look
now,
like.
Now,
I'm thinking if he gets 20 plus.
Yeah. Pearl said on Wednesday, Chaney's teams have won a lot, in practice. I saw some of that again yesterday. I mean, it's just he is a really good weapon there. I like the addition of Turtle Hudson as a backup power forward. Mm-hmm. I think they've got real length. I think that's where Chris Moore is probably going to settle more. Like, I think Auburn's going to need him more at the four than the three this year, but he's got that versatility. I think Chaney, if Chaney can take that step forward, and it's like, oh, how do you replace Jalen Williams' production? Well, you get Chaney Johnson, but then also you get more out of Janai, you get more out of Denver, you get more out of Chad, you get a lot more maybe this season out of your point guard with J.P. Pegues and whatever you do there.
You mentioned Chris. I do wonder with the new additions and if there's...
He's probably the 11th man.
Yeah, if there's an increase in minutes for Dylan, like what the role is.
He's been there before.
He's absolutely been there before. But last season when they needed him down the stretch, he contributed.
And if there's an injury or two and his minutes need to go up, they know what they have in Chris.
Really good depth, really good versatility. I like the way this team kind of comes together. I'll tell you another thing. First time really watching Tahad Pettiford and Ja'Kai Howard in person for a stretch. Explosive. Both of those guys are some freak athletes. Tahad had a one-handed reverse dunk that I was like, there are some 6'6", 6'7" guys who can't do that. Like he's a really, really impressive athlete. The other thing I would say, Ja'Kai Howard, I'm fascinated to see what his role is this year, what kind of minutes he can carve out. Because the dude is fearless. He plays basketball with a fearless – like, he's not – I will say at practice yesterday and the things I got to saw, he just didn't look like he was afraid of the moment. And he's got a ton of super experienced guys around him, and he was taking it right to him, so which is a fun attribute to have in a young wing.
That's great to see in a young player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's natural to be skeptical of what kind of role, especially starting out, there could be for Ja'Kai just because of, you know, like we were saying with you know, the experience and the number of guys in front of him.
And I think with Kelly in the mix now, I think that's part of the reason why you're going to see Tahad try more at the one, because I think that's just a good way to get him minutes. There's going to – like, think about it. You're two and you're three. If you have Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara, and Miles Kelly, those guys are going to command a lot of minutes. And even if you play Denver at the one some – those guys are going to be playing a lot of basketball, so it'd be interesting to see what they can do for each other.
There's also A.D. Scott, who is still on the team and on scholarship, and we don't mention him as much as some of the other guys. I imagine he's still a project developing.
Scout team center is probably the best way to put him right now.
It's less press, like his development is less of a concern or a question because Auburn retained Dylan and Janai. Mm-hmm. I think
I wouldn't expect him to be in the rotation this year, but he's that is valuable to have. If anybody gets hurt in that front court, you could turn to him.
Right. With Dylan and Janai returning, it's less crucial for A.D. Scott to contribute this season. I think there's still people sort of wondering, like, what does Auburn have in this big developing in the background? We'll see. But it's another piece out there for Auburn
it's gonna be a fun preseason for sure. You got some battles, you got some things to sort out, some lineups to get in. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is JP Pegues as a newcomer, as the guy who's expected to be the point guard, it's going to take him some time to learn his teammates, to kind of get into this offense a little bit more. You didn't hear a ton about him here yesterday from Bruce, so people didn't really ask him a ton of questions about him, but I think you can kind of watch him and kind of feel out, like, yeah, he's still got some growing and learning to do in this system. Great player, great game. You like his skill set a lot. But for a veteran floor general to be what he wants to be, he's going to have to really learn his teammates. And there's a lot of new out there. Pearl said it yesterday. Even though they returned so much off this team, he still has a lot of unknown because they're trying dudes in different spots.
Right. Guys are getting looks, and not just looks. They're getting a lot of work at different spots.
I wonder if there's temptation to ever run with a – five guys who were on last year's team lineup, which I guess would look like that would be Denver, Chad, yeah. Chris, Janai, Dylan would be a five that you could run out.
That's an unlikely five.
I'm trying to piece together. I mean, that would probably be your experience from last year's team five. You've brought a lot of new pieces in between JP and Tahad
and Miles
that would impact that. I know. I guess Chaney would factor in there somewhere.
Chaney could have been more since
Chaney over Chris.
Chaney
probably.
Instead of Chris could have.
You
been,
could play Chaney as a big three, maybe.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, maybe Chaney would be there instead, but
that's more likely.
Denver, Chad.
Chaney is significantly bigger than he.
Yeah, no,
here.
I forgot about Chaney. So Denver, Chad, Chaney,
Janai,
Dylan. Yeah, you could see that.
You could roll that out there in crunch time. That could be a crunch time five. It's not the most important reason, but those are five guys who have been playing a lot of basketball for Bruce.
There aren't a lot of teams that can bring back a possible five that you would play and go, yeah, that's pretty good from last year. There just aren't that many teams that are able to do that.
I'll be surprised if there's crunch time situations that don't have J.P. Pegues out there this year. I just
probably
just
because makes sense.
Just because he is the floor general, he is the guy.
He's QB. He's QB one.
By the way,
this team, yeah.
By the way, Auburn is going to play Furman at the end of the month in a scrimmage. I thought
it's
that
actually
was
the start of the month, right? It's November 1st.
Is it? Oh, it's October something.
I thought it was November.
November 1st is the FAU one.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
They're going to play Furman.
That's right. No, that's right. It was Bruce was saying this
last
Sunday.
Bruce was kind of doing this thing.
Because
like,
I don't think it officially been announced yet.
Well, and I didn't think they know, because it's the whole thing, the secret scrimmage.
Right.
You're not supposed to talk to them. It's not a secret scrimmage anymore. Learned just a few minutes ago that that's going to be open to the public at Furman. They're going to play at the big arena in Greenville.
Well, that means that'll be another charity win, which is great. Yeah. I mean, I like the NCAA saying you can do it if the proceeds go to a charity.
Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe you'll be able to get some information out of that one. But, yeah, Auburn will play Furman. That is a return visit from last year where Auburn got to scrimmage Furman and
found
a point guard they were doing it. So that and then that FAU matchup in that exhibition that – that benefit exhibition they do early on. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they do all that. And the other thing I really liked yesterday, Bruce Pearl just saying, hey, I don't know if we're a top 10 team, but I can schedule like a top 10 team. And, you know, I just want to go ahead and get Auburn fans used to it. Auburn's probably going to lose multiple games in non-conference play unless they're just a bunch of world beaters. But they're going to be better for it on the other side, because I think Alabama's a great example of that last season. Even if you take your lumps in non-conference play, it sets you up so well, not only for conference play, but once you get into the NCAA tournament. I mean, think about how many more losses Alabama had than Auburn last year, and they were right next to each other on the same line.
I'll tell you what, though, some of these preseason top teams that are facing Auburn early, they're replacing as much or more than Auburn is, right? When you talk
Auburn returns more production than any SEC team but A&M, I think.
Sure.
It is a very, like.
And how many of the if you think about the teams that were 1, 2, 3s, or 4s in the NCAA tournament last year, how many of them bring back production like Auburn brings back? It's probably a very short.
Houston,
Houston lost the point. But Houston loses the point guard, who was a huge part of what they were doing last season. Probably, you know, maybe the
but
top point guard.
But they bring a lot back off of that.
But like Gonzaga and UConn, Duke, like there are teams that.
Duke is a brand new team for
the most part. Even though they feel good about what they're bringing into the season, it's dangerous to play a team that returns as much as Auburn does for those. You know, I don't want to make this, Justin, Auburn's not locked in there with them. You know, they're locked in there with Auburn sort of situation because these are
– especially that Houston game.
I know. Like these are some tough games. But it's dangerous on the other side too, because you're facing a team with a lot of experience that was pretty good last year, and you're doing it – some of these teams are doing it with big question marks early in the season about what they're going to look like.
I mean, you could come out next year or –
what's Gonzaga doing? They'll be fine. Returning?
They are returning a decent bit, but not a ton.
And that's a potential matchup in Maui, right? Like that's no. or it's not.
No,
it's,
Carolina, UConn.
For some reason, I thought Gonzaga was.
Yeah, no, Gonzaga's not in the field. It's Carolina, Michigan State, UConn, Dayton, Colorado, and
Iowa State is the.
Well, you're playing. You know, you're playing Iowa State. Yeah. Who's the other team? I'm blanking on.
Yeah.
There's somebody else out there.
Yeah, there is someone.
For some reason, I confused Gonzaga with somebody else. But no, yeah, UNC and UConn as potential matchups.
UNC, UConn, and Michigan State. Any combination of those teams would be pretty tough.
And then before we get to the bottom of the hour break and wrap it up, basketball, Auburn could have an addition.
By the end.
That's right. Around 5 o'clock, Simon Walker, 6'5" shooting guard from Huntsville.
Yeah, it would be a big pickup to have for sure. A guy that, you know, you'll take a shooting guard with some height.
Yeah,
some
no
length,
kidding.
And a local guy. And, you know, knowing that Auburn's got some in-state targets they want to get in these next couple of classes, it would be a big pickup for him.
What's the latest buzz on Carmelo Jr. / La Anthony Jr.? Is that
I haven't heard a ton.
I saw a story recently saying he didn't feel pressure to pick Syracuse from his father, but I feel like that was the last.
That one's you don't hear as much.
That was the last update I heard about his.
Auburn's got some visits. Some guys who have visited.
Yeah, they got
recently,
a couple of top 50
guys
coming in this weekend.
Yeah, they've got plenty of targets out there. Mm-hmm. This will probably be one of the bigger classes Auburn signs out of high school, just because
look at all the
final year
guys.
They'll have to replace a lot, and I think I think they can get a handful of high school guys, get a handful of transfers, reload that way. They could be in a good spot.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in again. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. As we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
Care about your feet and want to make them happy, check out Auburn's newest footwear experience, Love to Run. With the area's only pressure mapping system to analyze foot function, Love to Run identifies the perfect shoe for you. With brands like Ultra, Brooks, Hoka, they'll have your feet comfortably covered. So whether you're training for a marathon or just trekking through the marathon of life, Love to Run is ready to set the pace with you. 1957 East Sanford Avenue in Auburn.
Hey, this is Ryan Wade, owner and stylist at 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Football is back on the plains, which means it's time for Tiger Takes.
Join Bill and Dan every Wednesday at 5:30 on The Drive
as they visit with Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante. Every week, the guys hear the unique perspective from inside the locker room while learning the latest news about the team. Tiger Takes every Wednesday at 5:30 on The Drive on ESPN 106.7. Brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. War Eagle.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Russell Building Supply is your hometown home improvement store. You'll find what you need when you need it. And as a Russell Rewards member, you'll be in the know about monthly specials and exclusive offers. Russell Building Supply, East University in Auburn, across from Cary Creek Publix.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Remember when you would dream about what you would grow up to be? Imagining your dolls were students or your Legos a skyscraper. Maybe it's time to turn that dream into a reality. At Southern Union State Community College, you can discover your dream career in healthcare, business, manufacturing, engineering, and more. From imaginary to extraordinary at Southern Union State Community College. Visit SUS.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Don't forget, coming up in about a half an hour or a little less, we'll be checking in with David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. He is in the final half hour of his show on WGOW up there in Chattanooga.
That's right.
So we'll get his thoughts on all the games going on. I mean, he was out in Norman last week for Tennessee's win over Oklahoma. So we can get a little scouting report from him on what he saw from Oklahoma.
We have not talked all that much Bama Georgia.
No, we haven't. Week. I am surprised that it has stuck Georgia, the slight favorite all week long, when it sure seems like, doesn't it seem like things point more toward Alabama? Is it strictly because it's Kalen DeBoer's first huge game at Alabama?
I wonder if leaning towards Bama sort of overemphasizes Georgia not playing all that great at Kentucky.
Well, like, leaning toward Bama when Georgia doesn't have a couple of huge pieces that they had last year when they lost to Alabama.
I mean, this offseason, one of my big questions for Georgia was, you're replacing Brock Bowers, who might already be a top three, top five NFL tight end. Some folks might tell you by the end of this season he's going to be the top of that list. And also McConkey, who's a starting receiver in the NFL. Like, replacing those guys in one offseason is tough for any offense. Carson Beck, when he ran into trouble last year, that's where he looked. Now he's figuring that out with some other pieces. It did not work all that smoothly against Kentucky.
No.
I think taking that on the road, maybe I'm guilty.
It's in Tuscaloosa. I mean, hey, Nick Saban's going to be there with game day. Jalen Milroe is more than a handful. It's at night.
I'm going Bama. Bama pulls away in the fourth quarter would be my guess.
I don't know about pulls away, but
Ferg,
I just think it just doesn't look right that Georgia's the slight favorite.
Yeah, I mean, my thing with Alabama right now is it feels like their offense is kind of boom or bust at this point. They've had to rely on those big plays. I don't know if they can get those against Georgia on a consistent basis. That Georgia defense, Georgia struggled at Kentucky for sure, but defensively they have been pretty fearsome all year long. So I don't know. I mean, I think Georgia's the better team, and it's on the road. It's such a big game. I don't know.
Who's the best offense that Georgia has played, though? Clemson, I guess.
Yeah, Clemson's got to be. Clemson's moving the ball really well now. I like this Georgia defense a lot, and
Bama's offensive line struggled up until Wisconsin.
They really struggled against USF.
Yeah, Wisconsin was a step in the right direction, but still, like, that would be like if you told me Georgia won this game convincingly, I would assume that Bama's offensive line had a real bad night.
Yeah,
rather, I would like if you told me like, okay,
yeah, I don't
Bama's,
think it's going to be convincing, but the, the inconsistency, and it's a new offense. It's a lot of new for Alabama. But that inconsistency early on against teams that aren't nearly as good as Georgia is on defense gives me a little bit of pause in this matchup. Just because I think it's obviously, was it 2-3 point favorite?
Yeah, like yeah. 2.5.
Yeah,
two and a half.
It would be. I don't know. I like Georgia in this game. But you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. And they've got to move things on their own offense because Alabama's defense is off to a great start this year.
Yeah. So I mean, we'll talk with David though at the top of the hour. Get his thoughts on that. He'll probably be at that one, I would think, Saturday as well. We'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, Ferg? We've talked obviously all week about the quarterback situation. That's what everybody wants to talk about. I mean. How do you see it heading in to Saturday?
I would be surprised if they roll out with Hank Brown again on Saturday. If that's the case, that means that in practice this week, Hank was the better performer.
Yeah.
I think the default option would be to go back to a guy like Thorne. I think his running ability, his mobility could help him. It's experience. This Oklahoma defense is nasty. I mean, it's a really, really good group. I don't know if you want to send a redshirt freshman back out to the Wolves again. It's an interesting spot to be in, though. If Thorne still struggles,
what do you do?
What do you do? Because, I mean, this is something I wrote about it for the mailbag tomorrow. There's, you know, people ask me, like, oh, well, what do the numbers say? And I was like, well, the numbers kind of point to Hank Brown more, but they don't even have near the same amount of snaps and the same amount of situations.
No, you don't have near the data to
exactly
make
so
it significant.
At some point, if there's not as much of a difference in the production, you might go with the younger guy at some point. But I think for Auburn right now, you look at the situation there, and they are 2-2. The toughest part of the schedule is still coming up. You're about to be on the road for a month. You just got to win the football game.
They've got – they win this ball game, they still have a chance to have a season that isn't a – just a complete disappointment. I mean, win this when you're 3-2. If you can avoid being swept on the road, then you come home and you have some winnable games, and you've got a chance to better last year's record before you head to Tuscaloosa.
It's tough to see them doing this without winning.
Yes, it's hard to imagine getting to more than 6 victories without a win over Oklahoma.
Well, right, and we talked about where vibes would be if you were to rattle off an 0-4. Yesterday, like if this, like if you were looking at 2-6 after the Kentucky game,
that would be 5 straight losses.
That would be 5 straight losses and 0-4 in this really crucial stretch and a second straight losing season in conference play guaranteed at that point. 5 conference losses. So I mean, this is it's a big stretch. A second straight one under Hugh Freeze. I would as far as quarterback, Justin, I would think that the best thing in the short term would be to try to salvage what was the plan all offseason, which is to maximize the offense around Peyton Thorne and see what he can do with these new receivers and if you can make progress from what happened against Cal. If you need to go to Hank Brown, I think you're better off because he's played some these last couple of games. You're better off than you would be if Hank Brown had not seen real action this season and you had to go to him in this Oklahoma game because the offense was inept. The fact that Hank Brown's been able to get the reps he's gotten, probably will be to his benefit.
Mm-hmm.
If he has to come in, I would guess in relief in this game, but the hope should probably be...
I would say if Hank has to come in relief, Auburn's in trouble.
That's what I mean.
Auburn is in trouble.
The hope should be, though...
Things have really... They've gone
off
badly.
The rails. You're off the rails at that point, and you're trying
because
to
I think if it's because I my and for sure I have nothing to do with the decision making, but I feel like if it's close, it's probably going to stick. He's going to stick with Peyton longer.
Sure,
and but if Auburn gets down multiple scores, then sure, then
and you don't
that's
want
you got to think
and,
about it,
and you don't want the plan to be both guys, right? Like I know fans talk about that.
No.
Well, you know, give I think the plan needs to be in the short term. Figure, you know, working around one guy and then going to the other one if it's not working out with plan A. And I just think right now, Thorne should probably be plan A, you know, until the goals of this season have changed. You know, like if the, you know, like you're saying, if you start talking about playing younger players and figuring out what you have on the roster, that's a little bit different. But no, I think if you're trying to maximize things and win this one. Yeah, my guess would be that you go out there with Peyton Thorne and try to make good on a lot of what you talked about this offseason.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think, how you feel about this, and more. 334, yes, that's right. I started to say 331. No, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybart. Text us on the Drive text box.
334-564-1840 is the Drive text box. That's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. You're expecting Thorne to start this one too.
Oh yeah. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. I think I agree with Justin. If he doesn't, that means he's really had a rough week of practice. All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hip pain is not to be taken lightly. It could be a sign of hip impingement. If pain, stiffness, or limping persists, see a hip specialist at the orthopedic clinic. Treatment includes non-surgical options.
Here on the Thursday Drive, Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, while we got a minute, talk a little bit about what's coming up, what you got going there at the Observer, and what's coming up.
Yeah, busy week this week. A lot of Auburn-Oklahoma preview stuff, looking back at the Arkansas game. Got a film room on the what all happened on third and long for Auburn on defense against Arkansas. Tomorrow, Dan and I are going to have our preview podcast for Auburn-Oklahoma. We'll also talk some hoops there. Today's newsletter, a lot from Auburn basketball practice yesterday. Big mailbag out tomorrow. Coverage throughout the weekend from Auburn, Oklahoma. So check it out, auburnobserver.com. Sign up. Everything gets emailed to you as soon as it drops. So $6 a month or $60 for the full year.
During the break, I asked Ferg what he knows about the new starting quarterback for Oklahoma.
Michael Hawkins
Jr., mm-hmm. Who is, big-time. I mean, he was the quarterback of a big-time program in Texas.
And some recruiting service, I think Rivals had him a 4-star, but I think he was like a composite 3-star. But you look at his list, because I heard some talk about him that he chose Oklahoma over Alabama, and it's like, well, they usually have an idea when they're recruiting a quarterback. I looked at his final five schools were Oklahoma, Alabama, Arkansas, Cincinnati, and Incarnate Word. That is a very that's sort of an eclectic group of schools.
McKinney ISD football stadium opened in 2018, cost $70 million, and has a capacity of 12,000, which is it's one of the more expensive stadiums in the state of Texas, and has quite a bit of, you know, has a lot of the accoutrement that you may associate with a very fancy high school football stadium. So like this guy is he's played on some big stages for a high school player and came in relief. Played in front of a pretty big crowd last week, too.
At home.
But
so
I mean,
this will be his first road game as a collegian.
You think
since he is a true freshman?
It's a question we'll ask Don Dunn tomorrow. Ferg, what do you feel like defensively might change for Auburn, knowing they have an inexperienced? I mean, it would have been the same with Jackson Arnold as far as a guy making a career start on mm-hmm. you know, making his first road start.
But he had at least been on trips.
But he had been on trips and he'd played more snaps than Hawkins Jr. I wonder what Auburn's going to try to keep him off balance.
Yeah, here's my thing with Oklahoma's offense. Auburn's offense is self-destructive. Oklahoma's offense is just bad. They have been really bad this season. Now, there are reasons for that.
They've got a new offensive line.
And that offensive line isn't even healthy.
Right.
They've had injuries.
And now their receivers aren't healthy.
None of their receivers are healthy. They haven't been able to run the ball effectively. They put Michael Hawkins in there because they feel like he can give him a spark. He's got some
– He is an excellent athlete. I mean, that's where I think Rivals had him number three dual-threat quarterback in the country this past year. He's a guy that ran as well as passed for a ton of yards. I think he was over 4,000 yards total offense his senior year. And only threw three interceptions his senior year. So he's been a guy that hasn't, at least in high school, has a track record of not turning it over much. And they needed a spark offensively. I mean, they were doing nothing against Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. And that Tennessee defense is really good.
Yeah, they are.
Especially up front. I think for Auburn, you know, our Nathan King wrote a story earlier today about true freshmen making their first, you know, making starts in Jordan Hare Stadium and how they fare. I think for Auburn, I go back to, I think it was 2014, I believe. You remember Brandon Harris starting for LSU?
Yeah. Oh, and came in Auburn, and was Auburn like 3 of 14
or
something.
Auburn just
like that.
Got in his grill over and over and over again.
Right.
I think when you have an offensive line that's been bad, Auburn's got to get aggressive here.
Yes, they do.
And they got to get after this guy. Try to see if they can force some, you know, if they can force some turnovers, try to force some, you know, some bad plays from Hawkins that way. That wide receiver group is banged up. That offensive line's been banged up. And how many lessons did you learn if you're Auburn from last week where they had opportunities to get off the field over and over again, but too often they had issues keeping contained, getting too far deep, too far inside.
It was different things, too. I mean, they gave up way too many third and longs, but it wasn't always the same mistake.
And so that's the thing. A lot of people this week, I think because of the way the third and 19 touchdown went, a lot of people this week have been like, well, if you rush three, it's not going to work. There were a couple times Auburn rushed three and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was you got to execute it. And when you have 13 third and longs, and Arkansas wins essentially 10 of them. Mm. That's an everything problem on defense.
Oh yes,
you had guys.
You're not going to win many ball games when you do that, even if you don't turn the ball over.
You had missed run fits. You had missed tackles. You had bad coverages. You had penalties. You had breakdowns on the back end. Like you had failure to keep contained. You know, like.
It was an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Yeah,
it was defensive mistakes. And that's the thing is,
what can you screw up this time?
And that's the thing is, like, I'll say I don't think Auburn's play calls on defense against Oklahoma or against Arkansas were bad on third and long. I don't. Maybe a couple times you may want to bring a little bit more pressure. You can nitpick. You can do all that after games.
People are really. I think the one people are hyper focused on is the touchdown.
In
the third quarter.
For good reason. I mean, that was.
There shouldn't be a guy 5 yards behind everybody though.
But you know what? But that's not endemic of, like you said, 10 out of 13.
Yeah.
I mean that's not. But you know you can have a problem with the play call there. Play calling is not the only issue.
When I say it's the same thing with Hugh Freeze on offense. Okay, when you say. We had the right play calls. We felt like what we did worked. We had a good game plan and all that. We just didn't execute it. That is not a coach going up there and saying, well, it's not my fault. No. These guys are paid millions of dollars to make sure those guys can execute. So they know what's on them. Now, you can't make the plays for them, but it's their job to, okay, if you have execution issues left and right, how do you fix it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you get different guys in there? Do you coach it differently? Do you call things different? Like, it's on them. So when a coach goes up and says, hey, we had the right call, we just didn't execute it. That's not them throwing their players under the bus all the time. Sometimes it is. I don't think in this case it is. And I also think when you say, hey, Auburn had a good plan or Auburn called some decent plays, they just weren't executed, that's not saying the coaching staff, you know, gets a free pass. Not at all. They're the ones who have to fix it.
We're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. David Pascal joins us from Chattanooga on the other side, so stick with us for hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this wet Thursday. We've had a good bit of rain, but Nothing serious, at least here in the area, and looks like that is, you know, hopefully that is going to be the case, as it appears Helene has moved a little, moving a little further east, and we're in for a good bit of rain, including some heavy rain and some possible strong winds, but that will come later this evening and then overnight. But by tomorrow, it's expected that that will be out of here, and looks like pretty good weather coming up for us tomorrow and then through the weekend.
Yeah, so be safe tonight and this weekend. I think especially overnight tonight as folks get ready for. I think in the Auburn-Opelika area should just be pretty intense wind and rain. But these things are a pretty strong storm blowing up through the Gulf tonight. So
you're not kidding.
Be safe.
And it is huge. I mean, the winds are having effects as much as 400 miles away from the eye. So, don't think that there's nothing to be concerned about. As a matter of fact, we're about to check in with our good friend David Pascal from Chattanooga. They probably are going to be in for some pretty nasty stuff as well. So we will be talking with him here momentarily after we remind you that hour number two of the drive is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'll get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar here momentarily. We will get back to your calls, but first we're going to call in our good friend from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Sport Talk on WGOW, where he just wrapped up his three-hour show a few minutes ago. That, of course, David Pascal. David, are you guys battening down for Helene as well?
We are, but I think you guys are getting it a whole lot worse, or will get it, so I hope everything's okay on y'all's end. It's really weird. I've got a younger brother who lives in Asheville, North Carolina,
Yeah. And
they're supposed to get just a lot more rain than we are here in Chattanooga.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've got a sister in Black Mountain, so it looks okay. Pretty bad for them. And as a matter of fact, for us, it appears that Helene is moving a little further east, so we're going to get a lot of rain. But hopefully, nothing really damaging here. It's crazy. I mean, the weather we had last night and are having here today and tonight.
It's just sort of a light rain right now outside
it's
the window.
Not bad,
knowing how bad it's going to get a little bit later.
No, but it looks like it's going to be great weather for football by Saturday.
Yeah, I guess my biggest concern around the South, I mean, outside of the storm surge, because that's like the biggest thing in the Florida coast, is just how dry it's been. We've had our second driest August since like 1885, and so you get this extreme drought, and then you get tons of rain. Sometimes the trees can act kind of funny.
Yeah, the ground is dried up and doesn't soak it in as well either. So there can be some problems there. Well, good luck. Hopefully you avoid anything really damaging up there in Chattanooga.
Yeah, and back at y'all too, because like I said, y'all, it seems like y'all may get. Well, I don't know. The fact that it is shifting east is good for y'all. It's good for Tallahassee that it's not hitting quite as hard, too, because northeast of the eye is where it's supposed to be the most damage, and right now it seems to be heading in a very unpopulated area, which is good.
Bill, do you want to jump in on last week's games with Pascal, or do you want to talk a little bit? Because there's some big games coming up in the conference.
Well, we might as well get just some quick thoughts of best and worst.
How about Tennessee? I mean,
you were there, right? A
big win, David.
Yo, it was a huge win, and I mean, it's it was such a big atmosphere type thing with it being Oklahoma's first SEC game as an SEC member. But again, I mean, Tennessee, very first play of the game, Elijah Simmons, defensive tackle, breaks through for a 5-yard loss and just really set the tone. Oklahoma rushed 34 times for 36 yards in that game. So, yeah, huge win for Tennessee. A very different kind of win for Tennessee. They entered that game without left tackle Lance Hurd, and then right tackle John Campbell got hurt in the first half. So with Tennessee getting up 19-3, Heupel really tried to let the air out of that game in the second half, and that's something that he's not been able to do, that Tennessee just really hadn't had that capability before. They've been much more of a quick strike type thing, but really trying to pound and run out the clock they were able to do that and get out of there with a really nice win. Now, they've got an open date this week, so the biggest thing they need to do is get both of those tackles healthy before they go to Arkansas next week. But it is amazing to think that Tennessee is 4-0. They've gone from 15th in the country to number 5. They have outscored opponents 78-3 in the first quarter and 71-3 in the second quarter.
Yeah, that's great when you can do that and really put teams away. And against Oklahoma, let's face it, I mean, it was a great defensive effort by Tennessee, but Oklahoma's got some problems offensively. They go to their freshman quarterback who's going to get the start, Michael Hawkins Jr., going to get the start against Auburn this week.
And how many times have you seen it kind of play out where, you put in a guy, he's a change of pace, he looks good in the fourth quarter, but then when he gets the starting assignment in the very next game, it may not be quite the same deal. So I'm curious to see how, if he can build on that or if he's not, doesn't look as strong as he did in the fourth quarter of the Tennessee game. So I was kind of surprised they pulled Jackson Arnold so quickly, before halftime kind of thing. But, Tennessee was teeing off on him, and this guy does give him more elusiveness. But, wow, and I know we can get to that Oklahoma-Auburn game in a little bit, but goodness gracious, what a final stand for Auburn. You're sitting there, you knew you had these 5 home games at the beginning of the year, and you're 2-2 with 2 losses to teams you beat on the road last year. So there's definitely kind of a last stand element to that game on the Plains for sure.
Yeah, no question.
These are two programs that are not used to starting 0-2 in conference historically. No. I mean, you go back and we were talking about it in the first hour, David, but I mean, Bob Stoops had seasons where he didn't lose 2 games pretty routinely.
If he had a season where he lost 2 conference games, that was a bad season for the Sooners.
And Brent Venables could be, either Brent Venables or Hugh Freeze will start this season 0-2.
One of them's going to. We'll talk about that one a little more. One more quick thought from last week, how close Vandy had that win in their grasp at Columbia last week.
Yeah, and I mean, you just added up those the kickers of both teams. You know, they were a combined 5 of 10. And of course, the last one to miss was Vandy's. I think it was a 31-yarder to send that thing into a third overtime. And at that point, they start alternating the 2-point conversions. I thought Clark Lee was interesting after that game because they asked, he was asked about, hey, you just took a top 10 team into double overtime on the road, and he's like, we're not playing that moral victory game anymore. We don't want to be judged by that. I mean, they've got to break through and start winning those type of things. But on the flip side, I think we've all seen Missouri. They do not look like the Missouri of last year. They've been very, very fortunate these last couple of weeks, and the pollsters kind of recognize that. I think they dropped from like 8th to 11th in this week's AP poll. So Missouri has some work to do before they start impressing. We've talked about it before. They've got a very favorable schedule to get to 10-2. But, when they start getting criticized and they put that schedule and performances under the microscope, 10-2 may not be enough for them to get in the college football playoff.
And right now, 10-2 doesn't look as easy as it did because, I mean, you'd assume that these first 4 would just be cakewalks and hadn't been the case the last couple of weeks.
Agreed. They'll be a fun team to watch come selection time, just to see. And to kind of circle back to the team we've already talked about, I really thought Oklahoma was the key game for Tennessee. And if Tennessee could win that, their playoff situation would look really pretty. Because now I think if Tennessee has competitive losses to Alabama and to Georgia, and those are their only defeats, I think a 10-2 Tennessee's a cinch to make the playoffs.
Well, I agree with you 100% on that.
I still, Missouri has looked competitive in the trenches with Boston College and Vanderbilt, right? Like, I want to see what that means when they start playing teams that are at least a little bit of an upgrade over Boston College and Vanderbilt, right? Like, that's a, it's still something of an X factor for a team ranked in the top 10.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of these things that with a playoff and 12 teams, you just kind of need it, the teams that you beat to keep winning to make yours look better, and that's certainly a thing with BC. I mean, Boston College going into that Missouri game certainly looked like a much more competitive opponent than we all thought just because of what they did down to FSU down in Tallahassee.
All right, let's get your thoughts on some of the games this weekend. Some intriguing matchups. We'll get to the big one and the Auburn one here in just a couple of minutes. But Arkansas, Texas A&M at Wally World. This one has been, you know, generally in A&M's favor, but Arkansas is playing. You know, they're so close to being 4-0 right now going in, and yeah, they are.
Jerry World.
Yeah. Did I say what? Yeah, my bad. What am I? Wally World. I'm flashing back to. My goodness.
You want to describe my face.
I didn't even know it when I said it.
I know.
I said it, and it's like something world.
Look, National Lampoon's. I love it. No, anyways,
it's vacation.
Jerry Jones hosting hosting
absolutely.
Arkansas.
But anyway, A&M's had the upper hand there, and you would have thought coming in, Arkansas expected to be among teams at the bottom of the league. But like I said, they're close to being 4-0, an interesting team. I still think they need to get better passing from Tylan Green to really continue to have opportunities to win more ball games here. But this is a pretty interesting matchup. A&M about a 5 or 6 point favorite.
Parks closed. The moose out front should have told
That's
you.
That's right.
this is a total John coin Candy. Flip for me. You mentioned it before. I mean, when these two teams were in the Southwest Conference, Arkansas used to just own them. But since Texas A&M came into the SEC, it's 11-1 Aggies in this series. And that's where I'm curious about Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas has had Texas A&M beat so many times, and they absolutely, a costly turnover here, a boneheaded play there, and the next thing you know, Texas A&M celebrating again. So I just think this is such a mental hurdle for Arkansas. Can they do it? Yes. You know, they did it back in 21, but in these last couple of years, they've just let it get away from them again. So I picked Texas A&M in a close one, and I guess I'm just kind of a believer in this mental thing. You know, Arkansas has probably played better this point. Texas A&M's had a couple of games where you're just like, eh. But I went with the Aggies to win the final game at Jerry World, because next year this thing's at Fayetteville, and it's going home and home after this.
Yeah, the way it should.
Yeah.
The Kentucky Ole Miss, I mean, Kentucky, a huge favorite. I mean, nearly 3-touchdown favorite. Ole Miss, about a 3-touchdown favorite over the Wildcats as they come in. Kentucky played so well, and you've heard Lane Kiffin's talking about that NFL defense that Kentucky has because of what they did against Georgia. But I don't buy that, Lane.
Yeah, I tell you where Lane was very honest is when he was talking about Furman and Middle Tennessee and Wake Forest and Georgia Southern, and he's like, yeah, I don't think that's really prepared us for our SEC schedule.
That's true.
Because it hasn't. But that said, I do think Ole Miss is a really good team across the board. We've talked about what they've done in the trenches and what they've added there through the portal. You know, I think the line's like 17.5. Mm-hmm. I mean, so maybe Kentucky does pull the line. But I just think Ole Miss has way too much firepower and wins this thing like 35-20 or something.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if Kentucky holds Ole Miss down too much. Now,
I mean, we haven't really seen Ole Miss face any friction or resistance yet, and I do wonder, like,
look
if
at the schedule, though,
if they were to make a couple of mistakes early, could it throw them off schedule, and could this game be closer? It does feel like they probably should be multiple scores better. At home, they should be multiple scores better than Kentucky.
Yeah, and I am curious to see if this game stays close because, you know, if it doesn't, if Ole Miss just runs away and hides with this, now all of a sudden you're already talking 3 league losses for Kentucky. I know you can call the Georgia one a moral victory, but the other two wouldn't have looked so good.
No, you're absolutely right. Man, across the state, Mississippi State's just a disaster, it appears, here early on, and they are huge underdogs. It's very unusual to see a team not named Vandy as big an underdog as Mississippi State is this weekend.
You bring up a heck of a point. I've seen it like 38.5, yeah. And you're just like, wow. And but you know something? I mean, the way Texas can put up points, you know, I know Steve Sarkisian, I think he's going to announce maybe even tomorrow or whenever. I know he just hadn't announced the starting quarterback as of this afternoon who he's going with. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you think about Mississippi State. They lost their quarterback last week against Florida. They are just a very bad SEC team right now. I mean, incredibly bad. And this does have, you know, 45-10, 55-10 mm-hmm. kind of written all over it. Boy, you talk about dealing the newcomers, you know, because I think we touched on this last week.
Yeah.
Arkansas and Schedules. South Carolina lost their very first games against existing SEC teams. So did Texas A&M and Missouri. Oklahoma lost its first, but Oklahoma had a much tougher draw than they gave Texas.
Yeah, and they do throughout the entire season. We were all right. Let's go ahead and jump into the Oklahoma Auburn game, because I was looking, when you look at Oklahoma's schedule, man, they play, other than South Carolina, it's nothing but ranked teams the rest of the way after this weekend. I mean, they have Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Missouri, Alabama, and LSU. That's how they close it out after they started 0-1. I mean, if they don't win this weekend, it might be tough to do a whole lot better than I mean, if 3-5 might be a real good turnaround. They would if they lose this weekend.
They would have to rally to get to 3-5 in conference play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the stat that I remember seeing last week was after their first three games, their last nine opponents were ranked in last week's top seven, and then a sixth game would have been against LSU, which was like 16th. So, yeah, I mean, Oklahoma's schedule is incredibly tough. I mean, breaking down this game, I think having seen Oklahoma, and having watched my share of Auburn, unfortunately, most of the games I've watched for Auburn were against Arkansas and Cal. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the I would say if you had to pick Auburn's offense, Auburn's defense, Oklahoma's offense, Oklahoma's defense, the best unit of those four would be Oklahoma's defense. I mean, they've got a very mm-hmm. nice defense, and really, to their credit, did some things against Tennessee that were impressive. But so I think it's low scoring. You know, I think this should come down to the wire. I mean, I picked Oklahoma, but I think I picked them like 17-16, which is actually taking Auburn and the 2.5 points or whatever they're getting. I just see this being a very tight game that the winner may not even get to 20.
Yeah, this is a critical game for Auburn as well. We've been talking about it. I mean, if Auburn wins this one and they can win a game on the road in the month of October, then they have a path to be able to improve on last year's record.
This has weird.
But they have to win this week.
Weird low score written all over
uh-huh,
it, right?
Like
Auburn Tennessee 08, David, or something. You know, one of those games where it's just a. It is a fight for field position.
Yeah, let's that Auburn 08 game against Tennessee, that set college football back. That and the 3-2 game in Starkville set college football back many years.
14-12 was the Auburn the Auburn 2008 victory.
Yeah, I think one of Auburn's touchdowns was recovering an Arian Foster fumble in the end zone.
I think that sounds about right. Yeah.
And then the big ball game in Tuscaloosa. Georgia has been a slight favorite, and it's held up all week long, despite the fact that Carson Beck doesn't have Brock Bowers back. And I mean, it would seem like things would favor Alabama with the game being in Tuscaloosa, with it being at night, with Nick Saban back with game day and so forth. But it stuck Georgia all week. I expect this to be a great ball game. What are your thoughts?
Well, and it's like the old adage of Vegas guys, they build the nice houses and the nice casinos and the nice hotels. I mean, the fact that line hadn't moved mm-hmm. is very interesting to me. And, of course, there's that great stat that Alabama's a home underdog for the first time since 07 when Les Miles and the national champion LSU Tigers came in there. With this one, I'm not going to put too much into Georgia-Kentucky.
Right.
I would put more into who's been at their best when they've looked the best. And I would go with Georgia with their win over Clemson. In that category, certainly a lot of concerns. There's no question Jalen Milroe is flourishing under DeBoer, and that he's playing even better this year than he did a year ago. There's no question Georgia will have to figure out what it wants to do with Ryan Williams, because he's been just phenomenal. 28.5 yards a catch, leads the country through three games. You've got Carson Beck starting slow, and what is he going to do about? There are all these trends that seem to be going in Alabama's direction, but I'm going the reverse. I picked Georgia 23-17. I just think Georgia plays like they did in the second half of that Clemson game, plays more like the Georgia we're accustomed to seeing, and gets a huge, huge win in Tuscaloosa. There's just something about everything seems to be trending Alabama's way that I'm just like, this just seems too weird. I'm going with Georgia in it.
Well, I mean, if Georgia were to lose this ball game, then they don't have – they only have, I would think, one more opportunity to mess up or be in danger of not making the playoffs. Because, I mean, you look at their schedule. They have a much tougher schedule than most of the SEC teams that are vying, you know, for the playoff picture, with a trip to Texas or a trip to Oxford still on the schedule, and then Tennessee in Athens.
I will say this, though. You're right. I mean, they've got at Texas, at Ole Miss, home against Tennessee. If they were to lose to Alabama, with those three remaining games, I actually do think they could go 1-2, which sounds weird. But I think at some point in this 12-team playoff, we're going to see a 9-3
at large. I don't disagree. I just mean it could be pretty scary, though.
It could. It would be weird seeing a 9-3 Georgia being the 12 seed in the very first, or 11 seed in the very first college football playoff. That would be very strange.
Would they be lacking quality wins at 9-3? My concern there would be, if you're 9-3 and you've lost all three of those road games, who's your best win at that point? Clemson?
Well, you'd have a really nice win over Tennessee under that scenario.
That's true.
And you'd have a really nice neutral site dismantling of Clemson. And you obviously root for them to go as far in the ACC as they can.
David, do you realize in that 08 Auburn-Tennessee game there were 8 fourth-quarter punts?
Yeah. It was absolutely incredible what a punt fest that was.
When two hurry-up offenses are struggling in a close game, you get 8 fourth-quarter punts, which is – I mean, I don't know. That's like Tatis.
Yeah, that 08 season's pretty forgettable.
That's like Tatis hitting 2 grand slams in the same inning off the same pitcher. Like, I don't know if you're ever going to see it. You're going to see someone break that record.
And that's
the thing I remember about that 08 season. Bill, I may have seen you up there, was that Vanderbilt game where Auburn's first two possessions, they got up 13-0.
Oh, no. Don Dunn's listening. Yeah, you got to be nice. Right. The defensive line coach, our buddy Dunn. I mean,
and they stuck on that 13. Yes, we remember. And it wasn't enough.
Auburn gets up 13-0, and everybody had wondered if Tony Franklin had been locked into the bathroom because Auburn's offense looked unreal. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the game, it was like brutal.
It played like it was in the bathroom the rest of the game. Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. Great stuff, as always. We have a blast having you on, David. Really appreciate you spending some time with us. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you're doing.
All right. TimesFreePress.com for the articles, and WGOW for our sport talk show that's 3-6 Eastern, 2-5 Central.
All right. You're going to be in Tuscaloosa?
Taking Saturday off, and I'm really glad to just be doing so,
nice.
Just because I went to Norman last week, and I'm going to Fayetteville next week. So I am going to absolutely just unwind and enjoy being a football fan Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it'll be that busy in Tuscaloosa this weekend or anything like that. I bet it'll be pretty. You know what I mean? Like I think you might be picking a decent weekend to take off.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the title game of the 17 season, I'd heard so many horror stories because Trump was going to that one.
Yep.
I got to Mercedes-Benz at 2, and people that got there at 4, some of them it took like 2.5 hours to get through the line,
right.
And it started raining on them. It was like 40 degrees and rain to get into that thing.
Yeah, so I think that's a good call, David. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks again for being with us, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, you guys have a great weekend, too. Take care. Be safe.
All right. Great stuff, as always, from David Pascal from Chattanooga. We need to get to our first break. I know we're way behind, but it's tough to cut things short with David. All right, come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
What's up, guys? This is Bailey from 12K Salon.
Extra bumper music coming back
there you
from
go.
The break. But yeah, Simon Walker, I think, ranked number two player in the state.
Yeah, number two player in the state. Three-star, four-star, depending on where you're looking at. Top 150 player, top 25 shooting guard, 6'5". If you go and look, this dude shoots from the parking lot. He's got great range, good three-point shooter. I really like his passing ability for an off-ball guard. Mm-hmm. He makes smart decisions, uses his length to get creative angles. He's got a pretty good little mid-range game, floater, you know, step back, fadeaways at times. Good shooter. I think he has got the tools to be a pretty good defender. It will be interesting to see it. You never know how all that translates from high school over to college. But this is a guy who played on a Huntsville High team that had a lot of dudes score a lot of points last season. You know, and so it'll be very interesting to see what he does now that he's got that Auburn commitment in, and I'm sure he'll want to put on a show his senior season at Huntsville High.
And like you said, I mean, Auburn's going to have a few spots, quite a few spots. Probably a bigger signing class / portal class than is usual. I mean, Bruce was talking about it, saying, you know, usually a couple of guys. The fact of the matter is everybody loses players every year, whether they're seniors or not. The national average is just under 5 players leaving every team in the country. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Auburn's going to lose at least that many because they've got 5 or 6 seniors.
But due to guys expiring their eligibility.
Right. That's what I mean. At least that mm-hmm. number, and then possibly more. So a nice addition there in Simon Walker, the kind of player that just a couple of years ago Auburn fans were like, why can't we just have somebody that can come in and light it up from outside? Yeah. He looks like he's that guy.
It's tough to be a one-dimensional player, though. You know what I mean?
Because he's not. Yeah, but he is a guy that can really, really shoot.
You really want is for guys that are fundamentally sound and provide a lot of things to also excel as outside shooters. But I think Auburn, yeah, I mean, the team after this one is wide open as far as opportunities and where production is going to come from, and landing a player like this helps bolster that group.
Yeah, you know, and again, we've cautioned people to not be thinking about, well, next year we'll have, I mean, it's even crazier in basketball.
There is no next season anymore in college athletics.
I mean, no.
It stinks too, Ferg, because recruiting
and it used to be thinking, here's who we're going to have in 2 years. We'll have these guys, and then we'll add others.
I got into this conversation with somebody the other day in basketball, and it's like, for basketball at this point, you sign a couple of kids a class, maybe. Auburn may sign a little bit more in this class right here, but then portal.
You have no idea whoever you've signed if they'll be around in a year or two.
The way the sport is, yep. And I think you can be sustainable. And I think that's what Bruce Pearl wants to do. He's going to want to get a couple guys each class that he really, really likes. And that he thinks it may can stay around here and develop, or an elite off the charts player like if you have another shot at like a Jabari Smith or a Sharif Cooper, and then just portal the rest of your needs, because I mean you look at how many teams in the SEC this year where their starting fives are going to be brand new transfers,
mostly if not all brand new, and that's why I just asked him, because he talked about recruiting, that's why I asked him about recruiting and the portal these days. I mean, where he's got his philosophy is play 10 guys as double figure minutes, that can make it tough with some of the kids don't want to hear that. Some of them understand that, hey, they can get a whole lot better, have really good competition, but there's some that are wanting to hear, no, you're going to get 30 minutes when you come in. Well, that's not going to be the case with
most.
And
the creature comforts and the NIL and the perks of being an athlete in the SEC or the ACC or the Big Ten versus being in the mid-major level. Like I get why it's hard to turn down that major conference offer out of high school. But if you're not one of these projected lottery picks, if you're not someone who looks like you're a safe bet to get 30-plus minutes a game as a true freshman – you do wonder if the best path would be
you guys need to find somewhere out of high school where you can get
play
30
where you
minutes.
Can get the minutes.
Like it's probably hard to say no thank you to a bench role as a freshman at Auburn or Tennessee because
Alabama, Kentucky,
yeah,
Arkansas.
Because,
I mean, any
because
of those
you, because you think there's 30 minutes a game for you at Coastal Carolina, or you think there's 30 minutes a game for you at Georgia Southern or something. But honestly, like for your long term career, like if you could excel in those 30 minutes in the Sun Belt, that's how you turn into a hot property in year two that a lot of teams look at as somebody who can be a 30 minute a game. Mm-hmm. Kind of guy immediately. It's sort of changed the, you know, what the,
sort of it is changed.
It's completely changed.
Changed.
It's completely changed. And now, and like you said, now you have major conference teams that are, you know, what we saw as something of a novelty a couple of years ago, the model of, wow, 7 of your top 10 players are going to be veterans who weren't on last year's team. That feels more normal.
That is almost the norm
than ever before. And those veterans have to come from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are coming from the mid-major level and finding a. I mean that's the new Vanderbilt team, right? It's Mark Byington going and getting, you know, the 8 best mid-major players he could who fit his system, and we'll see what it looks like in year 1 of the SEC. The previous coaches to attempt that haven't had super promising results in year 1, but. You know, it's that's the model now for a lot of coaches taking over with a blank slate.
All right, 334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline. We can go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break now. Come on in and join us in the final 20 minutes of the Thursday drive.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air rallies for you, no matter the...
827502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. 20 minutes away from 6 o'clock, and let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Mitch is up. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Weather report from the Panhandle. It's raining.
Yeah, you know what? It's raining here, too. How's the? Yeah. I mean, what are the expectations down there? I mean, it's,
keep up the great work for us there, Mitch.
Thanks. But no, it was weird. I guess late yesterday or maybe early today, there was all kinds of rain down in the south. You know, in the southeast, but the hurricane was still, you know, quite a ways south, and mm-hmm. it's like they're all converging together, and I mean, it's going to be a total mess. I don't know when it's gonna hit landfall. I've been got burned out on the Weather Channel today. I've been watching some MASH and Andy Griffith just to kind of.
Well, it looks like though. It looks like it's headed a little further east though, doesn't it?
I believe so. That's what I've been hearing, and so you know, hopefully it'll be all right around here. I mean, we're ready. I mean, we got water, we got the generator, we got propane, we got all that stuff. But it seems like by tomorrow morning it'll be gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're even saying that by tomorrow morning, by 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, it'll be all clear here.
Yeah, I talked to somebody in Fort Walton who said like it's been windy consistently for the last couple of hours, but it's actually been sort of off and on even with the rain. You know, they've been watching the storm surge and stuff, and so it's, I mean, it's getting closer and some, you know, I know they're expecting some severe bits, but yeah, not as bad as it seemed like it was going to be even a day ago.
Yeah, I mean, the wind, we haven't gotten hardly any wind here yet, but I'm assuming that maybe in a few hours it'll pick up, but it's not much wind here at all. But the reason I called was I was listening to Coach James Hale's show this morning, and which Andy, I think, talks to him at 8:15 on Thursdays. I missed him this morning, but anyway, and said that today would have been Shug Jordan's birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I did see that earlier today.
Okay, I was just curious. I mean, I don't remember Shug because he retired in 75 and I was only 5 years old, but And I didn't look it up. I thought you guys might know. How old would he have been if he was still alive?
I can do that for you.
He was born in 1910.
So he'd be 114.
Wow. 114, yeah. Passed away July 17th, 1980.
Okay, so he was about, my grandfather was 1912, and on the show they mentioned that, I knew that he was in the Normandy invasion. I don't think he was in the first wave, but he was mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And then Coach Hale said that supposedly Bear Bryant said that Coach Durden had more I can't remember now. I was just remembering it. Had more courage. I'm sorry, more courage in his little pinky than Coach Bryant had in his whole body. So I don't know if that's true, but I just thought that was kind of
difficult to measure.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I know Bear, I think, was in the Navy. He was supposed to take the Arkansas job, and Pearl Harbor got attacked, and he turned around, and I think he joined the Navy. I don't know exactly where he was, but I do know Suge was at Normandy. But and Dan, since you're music and movie person and everything, I believe today is Olivia Newton-John's birthday.
Oh, how about that? Passed away recently, sadly. last year,
right,
or two. Yeah, I met her her daughter Chloe at an event in Los Angeles years ago, who I think has also has like
did she go by Newton-John?
I think it's she goes by the name of one of, and I believe Olivia Newton-John had several husbands over the course mm-hmm. of her life. It was an Italian set, like Latanzi or something, but it was Chloe goes by Latanzi. But yeah, I heard a couple of stories about Olivia Newton-John, and yeah, sad thing her passing was pretty tragic, but yeah, a huge, incredible body of work that she left behind.
Yeah, well, that's really all I had, guys. Weather update and just a little bit of history.
Yeah,
so
good stuff.
Where are you going? We'll talk to you guys soon.
Appreciate
it.
Mitch.
Yeah,
good hearing from you.
Yesterday was the anniversary, Bill, of it would have been the last show Tom Petty ever did, because they did the Hollywood Bowl show back in 2017, and he passes away unexpectedly about a week later. So I guess early October is the anniversary of his actual passing, but
yesterday was the last
yesterday is the anniversary of the Hollywood Bowl show that was a huge crowd and rave reviews for it. People did not realize they were watching the final performance of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Man, something I wanted to, I'd nearly forgotten to mention this, we've talked a good bit about Auburn, Oklahoma. Our good friend Tex texted me earlier and said because of the weather and the fact that he's got another brand new grandchild, he's got a couple of tickets available for Saturday. So if you're looking for a couple of tickets for Saturday's game, you can call us. We can get you in touch with Tex.
And remember, too, that we are taking the show on the road tomorrow. We are going to be
downtown.
That's
right. The weather should be nice by then. Shouldn't be any trouble getting over to see us.
Looking forward to being at Bunkers for the first time. Bunkers in downtown Auburn on Glen, not too far from the middle of downtown there. Come and see us. Presented by our friends at Bud Light. We're going to be previewing the weekend in college football. They've also got the
be surprised if a couple of Sooner fans wandered in.
And they got the putting challenge, the championship tomorrow. So they've got a putt your way to 10K deal going on this week.
Championship's tomorrow, right?
Championships tomorrow. You still got time to qualify. I guess tonight it's 8 p.m. at Southeastern is the last leg of the putting challenge, and then the winners compete tomorrow night at Bunkers. So we're going to be previewing the putting challenge, the putt your way to 10K, and we're also going to be talking a lot of college football. Excited to be at Bunkers for the first time, thanks to our friends at Bud Light.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in as we wind things down here on the Thursday Drive.
Come in and get it out of your system.
7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, final segment here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Yep, Auburn, Oklahoma, Saturday. Again, I don't think we're overplaying it, Justin, how important it is. I know Oklahoma feels the same way, but this is, if you're going to have proof that you are taking the step forward this year from last year, I think it's, I can't see it without a win over Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think that's the case for Auburn this year, and I think if you lose, you are staring at potentially a Billy Napier situation mm-hmm. here at Auburn, where you inherit a team, you have a disappointing first year, you go 6-7, and then you take a step back in that second season, and then you start wondering what things are going in year three. Can you keep that recruiting class together?
Yeah, Florida had that top five recruiting class.
Yep. You don't want to be in that situation. And the thing with this game is this Oklahoma matchup, this is an opportunity for Auburn. You are playing a team that is struggling on offense, really, really struggling on offense. So if it is ugly, low scoring, scrape it out.
Who cares?
But you're at home.
Right.
And that's – if you have to play ugly football at home.
Hey, Auburn needs to win no matter how or what it looks like.
By any means necessary. We said that about the Arkansas game last week. We're going to say that again about this game this week. This is a crossroads type of game. We talked about Auburn this season need to take care of business in the first four. Well, guess what? You didn't. So if you mm-hmm. want to make any sort of progress or not go further behind this season, you gotta find a way to come out of there out with a win at Oklahoma. And that's the thing, is that this game is so unpredictable because you don't know how Oklahoma's going to look on offense. You don't know how – like, can it be just as simple as Auburn? Oh, well, Auburn, all you got to do is just stop turning the ball over so much and you may have a chance. Well, this Oklahoma defense is going to be by far the best one they've played all year.
And they're the best team in the league as far as forcing turnovers.
Correct. So, I mean, this is a tough matchup for Auburn, but, like, you know, on one side of the ball, yet the other side of the ball looks like one you'd like to have. You know, if you need a win, play an offense that is one of the worst in the country right now. And it'll be interesting to see how much the unknown quantity of Michael Hawkins Jr. plays in there, but that Oklahoma offensive line struggled a lot. Those wide receivers are banged up. Like, Auburn's got to come in and take it. And I don't know how they haven't been able to run the ball very well this year. But I think that's the other thing. Maybe the biggest positive surprise for me for Auburn this year is they're stopping the run at a really good clip.
They really have.
I mean, even last week, running backs, I should say. Mm-hmm. Last week, the big dude for Arkansas, he had a couple touchdowns, but he touched the ball a ton. It was like 3 yards a carry. We know what they did to Jay Knott in week two as well. So I think for Auburn, if you can lean on that and play the field position game. Play the field position game. Try to win that way. Take care of the ball. If you have to punt, a punt's better than a turnover.
Right,
and just find ways to, when you get your opportunities, finish your drives. Because I don't think the opportunities are going to be coming fast and furious in this game like they were in these last couple.
And then you look at Auburn in the situation without Champ Anthony. You're going to go even more experienced there in the secondary. But as you said, Oklahoma's got a freshman making his first road start, and without a healthy group of receivers who haven't been that impressive to this point anyway. So that doesn't appear to be – I mean, the even scarier thing would be if Auburn was playing a prolific passing team.
Correct. Yeah.
Coming up this week.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the big thing for Auburn, keep Michael Hawkins contained. But if I'm DJ Durkin in this defense looking at this matchup, I'm thinking, let's make this dude's life miserable. Mm-hmm. Like play some classic Jordan Hare. Hey, welcome to the jungle, young man. Like, this is where the next few hours are going to be very, very tough for you. Like, that's what Auburn needs to do in this game. I think that's their best case to win. And then who knows? Maybe you force a turnover and you get in great field position. Oh, wait, maybe you can score off of that.
Yeah.
Maybe you can generate. Like, you need to be able to help that out for sure on the defensive side. So this may be a throwback kind of game for Auburn, but if it ends with a win, who cares? There are no style points at this point for Auburn. You just got to win football games.
It's tough to take a lot of moral victories out of this one either. Like, even if you show progress.
Oh, no, there are no moral
like,
victories.
Yeah, no, this is one where it's you got to plug the holes on the boat right now.
It seems impossible to take a moral victory out of being five straight games to start the season at home, and you don't beat anybody.
Yeah, if you're good. 2-3.
And you don't beat a single good team.
No, you're right.
Or a remotely good team.
Justin, one more time, let folks know about The Observer.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. A lot of stuff tomorrow. We've got podcast mailbag as well. Plenty of stuff for the week. Basketball today. We are rolling. It is. I mean, we talk about this as like, oh, the busiest time of year is when football and basketball are going on at the same time. Well, that's it. We're here.
That's right.
We're already rolling.
All right, great stuff. We are out of time here on this Thursday. Don't forget, tomorrow on the road at Bunkers. So join us if you get a chance tomorrow. The weather, you know, be careful tonight. Weather is going to be more than a little rough probably during the night.
Looking forward to being at Bunkers tomorrow presented by Bud Light. Be safe out there tonight, everybody.
That's going to do it for the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.